First, I want to say that Kelly was supposed to be senior author on this presentation. However, she could not be here today due to a death in her family. So let's keep our thoughts and prayers with you if we could. The additional co-authors, Ms. Carla Emfanger, a research associate at our station, and we certainly want to acknowledge her assistance in maintenance of these insect colonies, as well as collection of some of the data. There are no less than six, or I guess, presentations at this meeting on secondary pests and their effects on transgenic cottons. Apparently, we've done most of the work on the heliothines, so we have to move to a different target. So there are several of these that you'll see today. The secondary LEP pests have become more important, just as we've seen a change in pest status with our bug complex. These are becoming more common due to the absence of insecticides as well. And some of these are not as susceptible to the cryoproteins as are the individual heliothine species. Kelly has taken the initiative to take Mike Williams' information from the last several years and adapt that so that she's ranked the pest status of many of these secondary pests. On the x-axis, that 1 to 25 is where that pest would have ranked in that individual year compared to all other pests. And her point is to show the variation over time as this occurred. This first one is for European corn borer. You can see that there is some variation. In 1996, it was actually, or 1995, it was in the top 10 of the pests listed causing economic damage in cotton. Since that point in time, there have been a general decline, and now it's really ranked between 20 and 25. Fall armyworm is a bit more consistent. It appears to be a bit more important over time, ranking either in the top 10 or usually between 10 and 15th in pest status. Beet armyworm is even more consistent than that, and in many cases has been represented in the range of 5th through 10th. And in recent years, last 3 and 4 years, it has declined somewhat. Salt marsh caterpillar is an occasional, very sporadic type pest, but there have been some instances when it has made it into the top 10 because of infestations in some areas. Typically, it's in the range of 15th to 20th. And then finally, the soybean and cabbage looper complex. And I would have thought this one was higher, but really it's between the 10th and 15th most serious damaging pest on the average. In order to further collect some information on the performance of these technologies against some of the secondary pests, Kelly initiated an experiment to look at Bolgard, Bolgard 2, and a conventional non-BT parental line against fall armyworm, yellow-striped armyworm, and salt marsh caterpillar. She planted these plots in the field, collected tissue, reinfested those cups that she placed neonate larvae in over time, and made sure that they had a fresh source of tissue. Her overall sample size was about 300 insects per insect trait combination. She rated these every 2 to 3 days after the initial infestation for mortality. She recorded days to pupation for the surviving larvae and also pupal weights 1 day after they pupated. She applied repeated measures analysis to these data using the ProcMixed system. This is an example of what some of the data looked like in a pictorial view. This would be the effects on a Bolgard 2 boll of a fall armyworm, and of course this is on a non-BT cotton boll. Although there was feeding on many of these structures that she placed these insects on, you can see in many cases that they were unable to completely penetrate the carpal walls of that boll. For salt marsh caterpillar and yellow-striped armyworm, she used leaf tissue. This would be on Bolgard as compared to a non-Bolgard leaf. For yellow-striped armyworm, Bolgard 2 compared to a non-Bolgard 2 leaf. These are her results for fall armyworm. She's included days after infestation on her x-axis and percent survival on her y-axis. She's presented this data as a line chart with cumulative mortality for each one of the traits. The non-BT is a green line. The orange line would be the data or results for Bogard. And then the yellow line would be the results for Bogard 2. We saw a very rapid increase in mortality or with Bogard 2, over 85% mortality within the first 3 days. Somewhat less with Bogard. And then, of course, you can see the decline with the non-BT. The statistics at the end of the line refer to the results at the end point of the experiment, which in this case were around 38 days after infestation. And, of course, she stopped after pupation had occurred. If we look at the mean days to death, we saw no difference in those days between insects on the non-BT and Bogard leaves. However, those insects exposed to Bogard 2, you saw a significant decrease in the number of days required for complete mortality. For pupal weights, as you would expect, there are some differences here, but that's probably an artifact of sample size. She only had one insect that was capable of pupating on Bogard 2. There was no difference in pupal weights between those insects on the non-BT and Bogard tissue. For salt marsh caterpillar, the data is arranged in a similar fashion, showing cumulative mortality. A very rapid increase in mortality and almost immediately after the insects were put on leaves. Within 2 days, 100% mortality on Bogard 2, considerably less mortality on Bogard. In fact, I was surprised that we saw a difference at the end point of the experiment between the non-treated and Bogard. And, of course, all three broke out among themselves. We saw a similar data in mean days to death. The days for complete mortality were significantly higher on non-BT leaves compared to Bogard, and then again compared to Bogard 2. As I said before, we did not see any larvae capable of pupating on Bogard 2, and there was no difference in the weights of surviving larvae, pupae, between those on non-BT leaves and those on Bogard leaves. For yellow-striped armyworm, we again saw very rapid mortality in all three treatments initially, but it leveled off very readily. Very high levels of mortality, about 82% on the Bogard 2, 45% on Bogard within the first evaluation at about 2 to 3 days after infestation. The slope of the lines really flattened out after that, but at the end point of the experiment, all three treatments separated out again. All three treatments also separated in terms of mean days for complete mortality of the larvae to occur. We did not see any differences in pupal weights for those larvae that survived between Bogard and non-Bogard, but we did see a reduction in pupal weights for those insects on Bogard too. So the conclusions with fall armyworm, we only had one survivor make it all the way through on Bogard 2. The Bogard tissue did produce some larval mortality. Larvae died more rapidly on Bogard 2 tissue compared to that on either of the other two treatments we had. There was a 10-day difference in days to pupation between Bogard 2 and the non-treated. And although we saw that the pupae was about 70 milligrams larger on Bogard 2 than Bogard, again, that's likely the effect of that one single insect that we observed. With salt marsh caterpillar, there were no survivors on Bogard 2. Bogard again produced some level of mortality. Larvae died very rapidly on Bogard 2 compared to the other treatments, and there was only a 1 day to pupation difference on Bogard compared to the non-treated. There were no differences in pupal weights between those on Bogard and the non-BT. With yellow-striped armyworm, we had 17 survivors on Bogard 2. This was the highest number of any of the three species she looked at. Bogard did produce some mortality. larvae did die more quickly and then after initial infestation on Bolgar 2 compared to the other two treatments. And there was a five-day difference in days to pupation between Bolgar 2 and the non-treated or non-BT tissue. The pupae were about 50 milligrams smaller on Bolgar 2 compared to the other two treatments as well. So there was a sublethal effect going on. I think these results tend to show that there are some differences that we are observing between the BT products, Bolgar, Bolgar 2, with these secondary pests. It's likely that we'll see these with the other technologies as well. So we need to be aware that there is the potential for these pests to develop to damaging levels. We don't need to assume that the broad spectrum nature of these cryoproteins can provide full protection against these pests, especially under persistent high infestations. And with that, I'll conclude. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger. Any questions for Dr. Leonard?
Good question. I failed to mention that. All of those insects were collected that year prior to infestation off various host crops. For example, that fall armyworm colony was off of field corn. The salt marsh was off of a native host. I don't remember the yellow stripe. Yes, sir. Good question. We currently don't have them, Peter, and that's what we're trying to do is determine if we even need any for these pests at this point. Yes, sir. Right. She actually started with squares and small bowls with the fall armyworm and moved forward from there. So she did make a transition in the middle of the experiment as the larvae were consuming the squares within her, in the process of providing extra green tissue. So we took that into consideration, and although we did not start them on leaves, there was plenty of green bract tissue they could feed on, I think, that would have been sufficient. Yes, sir. Not yet. We've done a little bit of that work over time, and actually we do see that, and that can be seen very readily with some species of insects. With others, it's not as different. That just depends on their susceptibility. That's a good point. Most of these leaves were removed from the middle of the canopy, so we could be very consistent in which leaf we were looking at. We actually counted down from the terminal to be sure we didn't vary too much in our selection of leaves. Yes, sir. That's a function of the experiment. With some of these armyworms, we tend to see very high levels of mortality, and we have to run these experiments several times to get a very comfortable data set. I think that's a function of how those insects are managed over time in the laboratory, and that's one reason we try to remove them directly from the field, rear them for a single generation to clean them up, and then automatically infest them back on plant tissue. So I would say yes at this point. There's considerable variation. The only one that surprised me was the last one. That one went down a lot faster in the non-BT than we had inspected.